Missouri, we will be recording the speakers and making the audio only available on our website. We will only be recording their shares, not questions from participants. Cindy will be sharing for half an hour and take questions afterward. To ask a question, please raise your hand in the participants box. Margan will call you on the order you raise your hand, then she will unmute you. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you. Thank you, Kurt, and thank you, Judy, for inviting me, and thank you all for making me welcome. I have to admit, I'm nervous. It's been a while since I spoke in front of a large audience, a large group of friends and members, and so I was honored to be asked. I'll begin by saying, hi, my name is Cindy, and I am a compulsive eater, and I have been a member of this fellowship now for almost 30 years. In June, it will be 30 years, and I have 20 years current abstinence, and I'm maintaining a 60-pound weight loss, so I have a lot of time in. I had some not so good time, and I've had a lot of wonderful recovery. Thank you to this fellowship and to the steps and to work in the program. And it's made my life something I would have never expected it to be. So that's just a little brief who I am. The topic today is abstinence and isolation, or abstinence and isolation. And I thought, well, what can I contribute about that? So I thought about the word isolation because I am an extrovert. That means when I am around other people, I gather energy and I get great ideas and I have a lot of fun and I'm always happy to be with other people. And so isolation is really tough. And so I got to thinking about isolation and why is that so tough? And it truly does have to do partly with a personality thing. But I thought about my history. When I was a little kid, I remember having pneumonia and having to be in the hospital, taken away from my family in a place where I was totally unfamiliar, and I was isolated. You know, it was scary. It was frightening. I wanted to be with other people, especially my family. I came from a really big family, so there was always something going on. So that I fit in there really well because I love the chaos of that family. But being alone was just uncommon, uncomfortable. And then when I was in high school, I always wanted to belong. I was one of those awkward kids that didn't know quite what the right thing to say was. I read a story in the Big Book the other day, and one of the things the writer said was, I never knew what to do with social conversation. I was always afraid of putting my foot in my mouth and always afraid I would say the wrong thing. And I guarantee you, I would say the wrong thing because I blurt out whatever came into my head, you know, and so there was a lot of times when I was fearful that I was unacceptable. And so that was a piece of my makeup, a piece of who I am. And I was a pretty not open. I was always kind of the boss of the crowd that I was with. Like I bossed my brothers and sisters around. I would come up with ideas and I would say, let's do this. And so that worked with my friends, but I always had only a few friends. And so I remember when I was like in sixth grade, my best friend moved away and there I was isolated. I had no friends because I had made myself one special person to be friends with, that I felt safe with. And so there I was in isolation. And I believe even at that point, I went into a depression. And with that depression, I started to find out about death. What do you get when you get down? I'm sorry, my mind just lost the word. Anyway, depression, I'm sorry. And depression actually turned out to be one of the things that I have. Not the kind where it's like life threatening or anything, but just simply my energy was down. So food became my solace. And I would take the money I had, whatever money I had, and food was my friend. So I would buy different things. And of course, we all know what kind of food you buy. You know, might have been something healthy, but probably it wasn't. And so that became a focus for me. And then when I was about 18, I fell in love and I got married to a person who had a lot of issues of their own. And one of the first things they did was try to isolate me from the friends that I had in high school. I ran around with a group of kids, and the reason I met my husband was because they introduced me to him, and I thought, oh, this is great fun. We will just always be this really close group of friends, and we will always get to go do things that are fun. But it turned out there were other things going on in the background, and somebody has their mic open, and it's making an awful noise, so please close your mic if you can. Anyway, So there I was, married to someone who thought that the perfect way to have a marriage and a life was to keep your wife like isolated. And of course, what did that do? It brought on depression. And what did the depression do? It brought on the food. And so I gained weight. For the first time in my life, I really became not huge, but overweight. And it was because we were eating buddies, and I was feeling really uncomfortable with the way my life was going. So isolation. And what did I do? I ate to deal with the fear. I ate to deal with the uncomfortableness of the situation. I also ate because as that marriage progressed, things got more and more violent. And so I would eat to stuff down the rebellion I felt, that the, you know, things that were going on inside of me that made me want to fight back or to get away. And so it was just odd to me about what was going on. I didn't understand it. I was a very young, immature person who'd gotten married at a very young age, had a baby, you know, and then I was trying to make my life work the way I thought it should work, which was that big happy family, that big happy interaction with other people. Let's have a party. Let's do this. Let's do that. And always finding resistance from the other person in my life. And only reason I'm explaining that is it just shows you when you're not compatible with who you really are, for me, it was just, there was an inconsistency there. When I would join a group, like I remember being a member of the NCO Wives Club, they had little gatherings. I was always fine. And I always was somebody that kind of ended up volunteering to give service. And, you know, I was the bingo caller. I remember that. So, you know, I just loved being a part of. But then I would go home and I would have to be punished for having gone out. And so again, what did I do? I turned to the food. I turned to the food because I had no way I knew to go out and tell anybody else in the world my secret. That we lived in Germany for 4 years and went through several sets of friends, because about the time we would get to where I was really having a good time, the rules would change and we needed to find different sets of friends. And then we lived in North Dakota for like 10 years. And each time there would be this challenge, you know, at one point he said, oh, it's all your fault. We don't have any money. Go get a job. So I went and got a job. Well, what did that do? It put me back into a situation I enjoyed. And what did that do? It created more stress on the marriage. So the only reason, like I said, I'm sharing all that is it just shows you that's not who I am. That being trapped was really hard. And I ate. I had another baby. I worked on my food all the time. I was always trying to lose weight. I was always going on a diet. I was also always cheating on that diet because I just couldn't deal with the balance that was necessary to achieve weight loss. You have to be able to get through a couple of weeks at least without eating, without binging. And I really was not capable of doing that. So at some point, I guess after about 12 years, Life, the marriage itself was just disintegrating around us, but I was having a good time because I had made a bunch of friends and I was having a lot of fun, and I thought that's what life was supposed to be about. And I managed to join one of the paying ways and managed to take my weight off. And my husband was gone for a year. He was shipped out. And somehow during that period of time, well, I'm not going to go into the sordid details, but I met and fell in love with somebody else. And by the way, my weight was normal. I felt really good about myself. I felt really positive about myself. And so I decided to make a change in my life. It was a great change in my life. Later, looking back on that, I also know that I did have a higher power, which was not a part of our lives. I think the day after we got married, my husband said, oh, we don't need to go to church anymore. What do you need to do that for? What do you need that stuff for? And so I was easy. I was easy to get along with. So I just adopted that lifestyle and that kind of belief. So when I was finding my way now as a single person, looking for how I was going to live my life, I was not looking in that direction for a spiritual answer or anything, but I was feeling really positive about myself. And so for 2 years, I maintained a normal weight and I got a really great job offer and I got to move away from North Dakota, move to Missouri. And I met the person I'm married to today. And so when he met me, I was this, I would say, fairly vivacious woman who was looking to have a, you know, to just enjoy life and have a good time. He had 3 children. I had 2 children. I don't know exactly why we thought we could get together, but what would make sense of that. But something, and I truly believe it was my higher power, led us to be together. And so when he married me, I weighed a little bit more than I weigh today, but not much. I seem to have a lot of confidence. I seem to have a lot of, I was just what I would consider a really normal acting person. And then he and I moved. I had built a community there in that place in Missouri. So when I moved, I came to a new place and I was having a lot of difficulty making friends or finding any kind of connection to people. And guess what? The food came back. The food came back. Oh, what a surprise. I could not stop eating. I had everything I thought I ever wanted. I had a wonderful husband. I had a great job. I had enough money to do whatever, you know, whatever I wanted to. I had never had a lot of money, so my wants weren't all that great, but I had enough money to do fun things. And we did have a social life, but I also had a job that was really stressful. And I just was always putting on a show. You know, you get up, you put on your makeup and you show up and you are this other personality, but I couldn't connect with other people. I tried really hard, but I just felt, and so the depression came back and the food came back. And then I tried just accepting myself. First, I tried to go to a pay and weigh or something, and that just failed miserably. And I knew I couldn't do that anymore. I had done that off and on over the years, and it just wasn't going to work. And I did go through some therapy. Oh, that therapist suggested I go to Overeaters Anonymous. I thought they were crazy, so I didn't do that. But I had a friend who suggested on several occasions that maybe I was a compulsive eater. And I thought, what is that? How can you be that? So I was busy trying to figure out my own solution. And one day she walked in and she found me eating out of a huge bag of stuff. And I couldn't stop eating in front of her. And I was really embarrassed. And I just said to her, I can't stop doing this. And she said, then why don't you call OA and I'll take you to a meeting. And I went, and guess what? I found fellowship. I found people who ate like I did. I found people who talked openly about what was going on in their lives. They didn't have secrets. They didn't hold things private. They shared from their hearts and they welcomed me. They welcomed me in and I wasn't isolated anymore. I had someplace to go on Tuesday and Thursday nights. I loved the people I spent time with. I learned a lot about how to work the program, work the steps, you know, be a part of the fellowship, and how to deal some with those highs and lows. But the best part was, I learned fairly quickly. I did have a little bit of a bump start, but after about 4 months, because I paid attention and I wanted so much to be a part of, that I learned the people who'd had what I wanted were doing something I had pretty much decided I would never do. And that was they were asking for help, not only from each other, but from a higher power. And I was not real sure about that part. That part was not real comforting to me, but I was willing to imitate it. I was willing to do what it said in the book, act as if. And so within about 4 months, I was abstinent, the simplest abstinence in the world, 3 meals a day, nothing in between. How hard can that be? Eventually, I had to give up a whole list of food items, but each one came off slowly and, you know, some painfully, some not so painfully, because as I recognized them, I knew what I had to do about it. I knew I had to ask my higher power for help. I knew I had to talk about it with my sponsor. I knew that I didn't have to keep it a secret. If I was struggling with a food, I didn't have to keep it a secret. And so my life progressed. My life in OA was wonderful. I was very grateful to be a part of it, and I gave a lot of service. And then I had a job that asked me to do something that was unfamiliar. I traveled and I trained people in different places, and I became isolated. I would be in other countries for an extended period of time, 3 to 4 weeks. And you know, they get tired of entertaining you. They're not your friend. I mean, when you're working with other people, they're not like your own circle of friends who you can call and just say, hey, you wanna go, you know, down to the mall, or you wanna do whatever. They were work associates. And so I began that dip again, that unfamiliar place of isolation. So I was working hard, and then I would go home late at night, take my food up to my hotel room, and have a little party in the room, you know, on the food I wanted to eat. Anyway, so guess where I ended up? I ended up, oh, by the way, wherever I was, I probably could have gone to an OA meeting, but I was too scared, so I didn't. Too afraid to reach out and ask for help. Too afraid that I would get lost. Too afraid, I don't know, I made up a whole bunch of reasons. And then, of course, I made up a whole bunch of reasons why I should get to eat certain foods that existed in those other countries. And so I ended up in relapse. I ended up with a weight gain, I ended up with a relapse. And over that 2-year period, I went back, you know, went back out. But luckily, I did still want what OA offered. I did. I just wasn't sure how to get it. And so when I came back kind of defeated after one of my last trips, I asked a friend to be my sponsor. I got back into program, working hard at it, not just coming to meetings and keeping my mouth shut and waiting around for somebody to notice that maybe I was in pain, or even to just ask me what was going on with me, because I was a good liar and I was good in denial. I got honest again, and I got abstinent again. And one more time, the weight came down. So that isolation was a problem for me. And then after, I don't know, 10 years of weighing a certain amount, I was able to find a new food plan that actually brought me to the weight I am today. So I've weighed what I weigh now for about 10 years, but I've been abstinent for 20 because my abstinence changed. So that's kind of what I thought about when I thought about isolation. What does it do to me? It depresses me. It makes me feel alone. It makes me feel unwanted. And so I had to think about, so what's different this time? Because this is different. This is isolation. Some of us are alone now. Some of us, I have a I still am happily married to that man. So I do have another person in the house, although sometimes I wish I had solitude and he would leave, but he doesn't, because he can't either. But there is a difference there. If you ever thought about what does solitude look like, maybe that's a little less intimidating than isolation. Maybe that's just being alone and thinking about what does my higher power want for me today? What is it that I'm supposed to do today? How taking that, you know, 2 minute check-in in the morning, how am I doing? What am I doing to help myself? How is my food? You know, so I have a little book, I keep a little journal of those sort of things, and I can take a look at where's my mood. So I'm going to be really honest and say about 3 days ago, my mood was horrible. Little Miss Cranky Pants was not happy. She had been isolated long enough and she wanted to go do something fun. And we all know that there's not much choices there. So what did I do instead of going into the cupboard? I took a walk. I wrote about it. I did some reading. I called, I don't know how many people, and complained. And finally, I called the right person and complained to them. And they just said, this too shall pass. You know that. You'll get over this. So for me, just breaking the isolation, just reaching out to another human being, put me in a much better mood the next day. She also reminded me to sit down and write about what I could be grateful for today, which would keep me from thinking just bad thoughts about myself and others, you know, and feeling sorry for myself. Self-pity is a dangerous place for me to go. So just being loved by somebody enough for them to remind me, this will pass, you will be okay. And they accepted the fact that I was crabby and wanted to complain about everything, rather than making me feel like, oh, what's the matter with you? You know, so I love that. I love that. And where am I at on time? Can somebody tell me? Just like.
I believe you have until 1:50. Is that right, crew?
That is correct.
Yeah. So it's up to you.
1:50? Yes, wow, I said a lot in 10 minutes. Anyway, so thank you. So now I'll talk a little bit more about just the idea of, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure I'm going to last for another 20 minutes or whatever. But those were kind of the thoughts I had. So one of the things I've been doing lately is working on my steps. So steps 1, 2, and 3, because when you're really, you know, looking at your day and all you have to do is the same thing you did yesterday, with the exception of maybe going to the grocery store. How many of you have enjoyed that lovely adventure? You know, it's like, okay, I was trying to, my normal shopping habit is like every 2 or 3 days I stop, I look around, I see what's in the low. They have this lovely thing in my local grocery store where it's discounted vegetables. You know, the things that are getting old, they put them out there for $1.50 a bag. And it's like, ooh, so every couple days I go and cruise that aisle to see what's on there. That's a little fun thing to do. Well, they're asking us to wait 2 weeks, you know, go shopping as minimally as you can. And so it's like, having to buy all the groceries I need. And because I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, I want them to be fresh. I don't want them to be frozen. So I'm having to deal with that part of me that wants to just go take that risk, and that part of me that thinks, wait a minute, there's a reason they're saying, you know, don't go to the grocery store every other day. So I've been trying to work on that. I also wanted to just share with you my lovely experience. You know, that first time I went out, I had gone out, no personal protection in gear, you know, and I thought, I'm going to do this. It's finally time. So I had the mask, I had the gloves. The hardest part for me was the vanity. I don't know about any of you, but putting that thing on and then having to stand in line with other people. And the whole time I was like, oh, I must really look stupid, you know? And then I realized, wait a minute, so does everybody else. What difference does it make? But that that was a part of getting over myself and looking at what are my needs, what are my wants, what do I have to do to keep myself safe, what do I have to do to keep my abstinence safe, and how do I get through this? I finally worked with my husband and I said, you know, I'm going to go do the big shopping, but you get to go run the errands in between because I don't need to be the only one taking this risk out there. So we worked that out and it's working just fine. So I am relying on, I was going to say the funny thing for me is looking at the steps. I'm really working on step two again. Because my higher power and I kind of go round and round. I have a higher power. I believe my higher power loves me. I just always get confused about what my responsibility to the relationship is. You know, how highly elevated do I have to feel that I am spiritually in order to be holding up my end of the relationship? Well, I have a higher power that just thinks I'm funny. And he doesn't expect a whole lot other than I, you know, work the steps, show up, suit up, do what I promised to do. And as long as that's happening, and even when I forget to do it, and even when I get to be Miss Cranky Pants, he still loves me, still accepts me, and still wants me to have what's best for me. And so a higher power like that is pretty powerful. I got into a disagreement with a friend the other day because they struggle with even believing there is something out there. And they wanted to tell me that nothing could keep them safe. And I said, but, you know, you are safe. You're home. You've got what you need and you are safe. So let's not go down that road. And that's exactly where my trying to figure it out ends. I'm not into trying to figure out what higher power is about because I have never made that paradox equal anything in my life. But I know if I can sit down and I can write, I am powerless over what's going on in the world right now, as far as this pandemic goes. There, nothing gave me the genius brain or the human, you know, immunity or any of that. I am powerless. And yet there are many things I am expected to do on a daily basis. Turn my will and my life over. Ask my higher power, what is there something different today I'm supposed to do? Is there a little bit of service I can do today? Is there someone I can reach out to that maybe needs a phone call today? Or can I just call someone and say, hey, I'm feeling lonely. Can we just talk? And, you know, I'm finding that works. That works for me and it works for them. And so that's that step three, doing that. If step four is pretty easy right now because the only person I have to come into conflict with is my own spouse, and we work pretty well together. And if I overstep, I know pretty fast that I need to make amends and work through whatever's going on with that. But for the most part, they're a very content person, so I don't get in trouble too often there. But I can still look at what am I doing to be grateful? What am I doing to give back? Is there something else I can offer? I recently ended some service work that I'd been doing, and that's been a challenge because if you've been doing something all really revved up and in part of, and you know, it's been great, you know, like with the people that worked on this workshop, and then it's over. And then it's like, well, what do I do now? Well, for me, now would have meant, oh, let me find someplace else to give service. Except here we are, no place. No, you know, I looked up volunteer work and it was like, yeah, you could work here when they open, or you could do this when they open, or you could, you know, and I just thought, okay, I guess I'm supposed to just stay home and wait. And so that's part of my step work is just learning that it's okay not to be super busy. One of the things that we've started doing for ourselves is we sit out and we have a fire pit. I know everybody does, you know, or I'd like to think a lot of people do. But we just sit out there and burn the trash from the yard and be quiet and talk to each other. And that's something that's so much more enjoyable than watching 24 hours of Netflix even though some days that feels like all I get done, because I'm like, well, what am I going to do with the next 2 hours? So I try to educate myself a little bit, or I try to move on, or try to do step work. I do have a friend, and we are doing the step work in the workshop book. And he's actually come over a couple times. We just had decided it was worth the risk. So, but we're working through that together. It's giving me a purpose. It's giving him some help. He's a sponsee. And it makes my day a little brighter. So my abstinence itself is easy. My abstinence has, I have a food plan that's just really easy to work. I go shopping for those veggies, those fruits, and then I pick up my protein and I'm good to go. I eat this much, you know, breakfast, this much lunch, this much dinner. So I haven't had to deal with that much, because the way I eat all the time is the way I eat now. I haven't looked around to decide that maybe I need to change my food plan. I do know people that have called me and said, oh, what I'm doing is just, I can't do this anymore. It's too boring. And I guess I've been blessed with one of those palates that just says, hey, I'm happy with my food. So I don't care if it's boring to you. It works for me. I see you're back up there. Am I out of time now?
You've got a couple more minutes.
Oh, okay. I just did that screen change. So I thought, okay, maybe he wants to take over again. All right. So again, I'm one of those people that, like, if I were going to a restaurant, I'd probably order the same thing every time I go to this restaurant, because that works for me. And every time I go to that restaurant, that works for me. So when it comes to food, I'm pretty easy. And if I start thinking that something in the freezer department looks pretty good, I just have to tell myself, you know, go back and check out the half price veggies. That's more where you need to be today. And I'm just going to pass, because that's all I can think to say. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cindy. I got a great deal out of your share. And to everybody, as a reminder, Cindy's